Hey everyone, thanks for listening. In today's intensely competitive business environment, brand empathy is rapidly emerging as a crucial differentiator. It refers to a brand's ability to understand, share, and reflect the feelings and aspirations of its customers. A study conducted by PwC found that 64% of US consumers feel companies have lost touch with the human element of customer experience. This demonstrates our need to inspire an emotional connection at various decision-making moments. Joining me today is Chase Friedman, founder and CEO of Vanquish Media Group, and Teresa Rose, a public speaker and a business and branding coach, to discuss brand empathy and our ability to craft authentic stories that can transform a customer brand relationship into an enduring bond. To support the show, visit chrishood.com/show, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, follow us on social media, or you can email me directly, show@chrishood.com. I'm Chris Hood, and let's get connected.
Connecting. Access granted. It's the Chris Hood Digital Show, where global business and technology leaders meet to discuss strategy, innovation, and digital acceleration. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Your digital evolution starts now. Here's your host, Chris Hood.
Okay, Chase, would you mind introducing yourself?
So I always like to kind of share with my belief, my mantra right at the top. So I believe my belief is in the inherent ability for businesses and organizations to do good and do well in the world. You know, I think where that comes from, I'm a storyteller at heart. I spent the first portion of my career as an independent film and television filmmaker, got wise that wasn't going to be a long tail career for me. But, you know, what I identified with is even the most compelling story, whether it's for a film, a television show, a brand, can still kind of ring empty or fall flat if it's not reaching and resonating with the right audiences. So I created my agency, Vanquish Media Group, back in 2016 as a way to champion both great, compelling brand identity and story with the digital activation needed to inspire and activate audiences where they are, meet people where they are. You know, I serve as a brand strategist, a fractional CMO, and, you know, our mission as a company, my mission is to empower purpose-driven people and brands from nonprofits to SMBs to Fortune 500s who are feeling overwhelmed and stuck in their path to scalable growth and also societal impact. They are not mutually exclusive, right? So for us, we deliver brand clarity, brand strategy, and digital marketing to help people and businesses do good and do well.
Teresa?
Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate it. So I have had many permutations of my professional career. The only extent of television that I've had, however, is I was on MTV's Remote Control when I was a freshman in college. So that's my claim to fame. And I have been lots of things. Right now, what I am is a brand and business crystallizer and a strategic co-creator. And I created this role to help people crystallize their marketing in their sales, specifically around their ideas. I like to work with people who are thought leaders, who are brilliant at what they do, and they are not brilliant at conveying it. And so I am a crystallizer. I get to work with people to digest, distill, and design a one-of-a-kind model based on their unique gifts and talents that you can draw on a cocktail napkin. So how I've learned this amazing skill and understanding how to utilize it as a strategic marketing tool is the fact that I've been a professional speaker for a dozen years. I've been a coach. I have led a global network of thought leading professionals, know their real pain points, and have experienced the real pain points myself, and to help them really get through the noise. So among other things that I've done in my life, being on stage, on the page, and on the screen is really where I have lived. And now what I do is I focus on seeing other people's brilliance and being able to be that second voice, being that that strategic observer of their brilliance in a way that I can see it that they can't.
I think both of you are going to bring some fabulous perspective to this conversation today. we're going to talk a little bit about brand empathy. And it really is about tying both of your skills together, the storytelling, the ability to develop a message around a specific brand, as you said, to crystallize that in consumers' minds. Branding messages have been around for a long time, but they've obviously changed over the course of the last 10 years. What's your perspective on how we've gotten here today?
For me, I think it's a fabulous question. I think the macro view of it is this shift that we've seen from more of shareholder-driven capitalism to stakeholder-driven capitalism, right? Where brands, businesses are being held more accountable and responsible to the needs and values of their customers, their employees, and their communities, right? There's a more demanding, a more enlightened consumer base that brands need to connect with on a real and authentic level. So, you know, branding, right? It's a culmination of experiences that your business kind of provides. It's so essential now, whether it's through the storytelling or really, quite frankly, getting back to your brand purpose, as I like to kind of frame it, knowing your why, your beliefs, why you exist in the world beyond just selling a product, a singular bottom line. You know, we're moving away due to consumer demand and stakeholder demand from just singular focus on product feature, price driven values. And you're seeing this across the board where a commitment to brand purpose is proven to drive business growth from consumers who are willing to pay more and be more loyal to brands that align with their values. Employees want to work with value-aligned organizations. Investors want to invest in it. So again, I think you're having this more conscious consumer and stakeholder community that is it's exciting to be a part of. And I don't think this is a trend. It's a movement. We are snowballing with the millennial and even Gen Z generation leaning more into this as a demand and a priority on behalf of businesses to do good in the world.
I totally agree. You used a couple of words that I think are deeply resonant with the work that I do and that what I've seen in the history. It's mindful, it's conscious. And what I've seen as far as the changes in branding is, at least certainly in the area of my expertise of thought leadership and personal branding, is this originally it was kind of look at me, whoever the product was, right? And I'm going to tell you all the wonderful things about me and use lots and lots and lots of words to do it. And then we shifted to when there were too many look at me's, then we shifted only to just only look at the customer, look at the customer, look at the customer, look at the customer. And now where I think we're going to is look at us. What are we doing together? Because we've all gone through what we've gone through and we continue to go through challenges, chaos, disruption, all of the things, what we're really finding is that the heart has taken over. And so there really is a matter of, we all know that we're great at what we do, and we all know that there's people that need us. Now, how do we actually transcend the features benefits conversation? How do we transcend the customer's everything all the time, and the only thing we should think about, to a place of true, what I call co-creation, collaboration, you know, where we're really going to go beyond just those mechanics of what branding is to really what the heart of that brand and that company is doing? And can we connect to the hearts of the customers?
If you were to go online right now and do a search for branding, pretty much the number one result would be logo design. How do we get from logo design to this purpose and heart that you're talking about?
Yeah, well, I would like to suggest that what that's clamoring for when we're looking for a logo is the people's desire to have a picture. So I specialize in creating pictures of people's brilliance. Of course, we create the right words off of that picture, but it starts with the picture. And there's a reason why, because a picture is worth a thousand words. And Alan Weiss says in Million Dollar Consulting, a metaphor is worth a thousand pictures. I would argue that the right strategic metaphor is priceless. Because when you can have the right metaphor that you can actually draw on a cocktail napkin, which is essentially what people want with logos, they want a ton of information to be able to be conveyed about their brand, about their promise, about their hearts, about their messaging, about their value in a logo. So they're actually asking, in my view, they're asking for the right thing. They just are calling it a logo. when it, in reality, it's a contextual model of their brilliance. It's a framework that they're going to be utilizing. And then, of course, you could take that and then and do some creative adjustment around that so it becomes a logo eventually. But what they're really clamoring for is, how can I convey my value in the marketplace, my brand promise, in a picture? Which is why they're looking for having logo work, which, of course, if you just hire someone to do a logo and not really understand the underpinnings of who they are, their why, to your point, Chase, their why of what's going on, then you're just going to get another fancy graphic design JPEG.
Yeah, I mean, amen to that. I think it's the need for that sort of immediate, tangible thing that represents their brand, and thinking that the logo is going to solve that. I mean, for me, it's really all about the sequencing. The way we work, I believe in measure twice, cut once, you know, no matter where you are in the stage of your business and your journey. You know, for us at my agency, we kind of preach kind of a three sort of sequence model. First is discovery. You need to be vulnerable and get clear with who you are, what you stand for, what you believe as a company first and foremost, or else everything else is going to ring hollow, right? Unless you really get clear in building a strategic foundation, your brand identity, your brand messaging. From there, let that infuse, and it does in our process, the inspiration for that beautiful visual thing that you're going to showcase to the world, right? But know internally what that means first and foremost. You know, from discovery, then hopping into identity, logo, website, assets, communication, the outward-facing visual collateral that signals that inherent message, motion to the world. And then from there, it's growth, right? Then the digital marketing tactics. So following that sequence, and not everyone loves it, they want, you know, they come to us saying, give me a lead gen campaign, give me a social this, give me a website. And we have to preach, pump the brakes. You know, you can spend a lot of time and money and energy getting these pretty fancy sort of quick fix trending solves that are going to waste a lot of time and money if you don't have your core foundation in place first. And that's where I believe branding starts, right, is inherently internally within the messaging.
Totally. And I have a similar framework. What I noticed in the course of my career, watching hundreds and hundreds of people create and coaching these people create a business based on their intellectual property, is that they all chased after monetize. How do I monetize? Monetize, monetize. And they would be cannibalizing themselves by offering, you know, disparate offers, confusing offers. They would just be noise in the marketplace. And then when they struggle with the monetization, they push against the grain of what the natural evolution of growth is to amplify. So when they can't monetize, then they drill down to amplify. I got to get the word out. I got to get my name out. I got to grow my, you know, my lead gen. I got to do all these different things. And they still waste valuable time, money, and energy. What I see is the trajectory of success when it comes to leveraging personal brands is clarify, amplify, monetize. Clarify starts from within. It is who you are, what you do, how you serve. That makes you different than everyone else, so you don't sound like everyone else, which is why there's such a value of drawing it on a picture, because the words can all sound the same and feel the same, but a picture is unique. So clarify. Once you are crystal clear that you can draw it on a cocktail napkin, then you can amplify it strategically across all the channels that people take in our brilliance. Some will watch us, some will listen to us, some will interact with us, some will read us, right? So if we have that all based on a model of your brilliance, then the messaging is consistent. Then comes the monetization. It's like it attracts the people. It magnetizes people to them, as opposed to us having to push it out all the time to the world, hoping they'll notice. Clarify, amplify, monetize is very similar to what your process is, Chase, about, you know, valuing clarity above all else.
In our digital world, we are all impatient. We want instant gratification. We want the success monetization tomorrow. And very few people are willing to put in the work and the nurturing of that relationship with the consumer or customers to reach the stage that they need to be at to be successful. How do we walk people through that? Because collaboration, an understanding of consumer needs, doesn't happen overnight. And it's great to hear these processes that you both have, but how do we get there?
Well, I think how long is dependent on any organization and effort, right? Where you are in your life cycle. But, you know, piggybacking on, you know, Teresa, right? You know, clarity, absolutely. But consistency, of that message and those efforts is absolutely critical, right? I've consulted and worked with startups that, you know, they're akin to these knee-jerk pivots. If something doesn't go right for a quarter, let's change it all up, right? You know, I know this is a platitude, but you've got to trust the process. And, you know, back to brand purpose, I get it. When we speak to brands about the reason and proof behind committing to brand values and purpose, it's not easy to do those things in a down economy. When your singular bottom line and quarterly kind of benchmarks are at stake here. But as we've talked about, the trajectory is going in that direction, right? And unless you are willing to commit and plant a flag in the sand now and have that clarity and consistency and through line of that messaging, it's going to come back to kind of really, you know, bite you, because consumers will see when you are pivoting and adjusting on a dime to what you think they need, but it's not really resonating authentically with your brand. So again, I can't give you a specific timeline in place, but once you build that foundational strategy, we do this, we do kind of an immersive brand blueprint, as we call it, where we're building your identity and your strategy for 6, 12, you know, years down the road. I think it's important to have that playbook for your team, your stakeholders, your organization, so that you're all running off the same plays. Once you're siloed and you have different competing interests from the brand, we've got to make, you know, this ROI and on this campaign and this quarter, and sales is saying something else or comms is saying something else. You need to be in coherence and alignment with that message and that plan, so that when things get a little bit lean and a little bit tough, you can still see the long-term effects of your efforts.
I agree. And I also think that it depends on what your process is to gain that clarity, and how disciplined will you be to stick to it based on the decision-making process. So I can crystallize somebody's brilliance in a matter of days when there's only one or two people involved in the conversation and we can really get to it. The more complex for that, and that's why I like to only work with people that don't work in committee, because committees and fiefdoms and different silos of organizations, the more complex that gets, the easier it is for someone to have a, you know, an opinion about it and say, well, I don't think this is going to work anymore, and then it derails everything. So the time frame of how a brand can really adopt this kind of new way of crystallizing and clarifying how they're being sent out as a brand empathy is about how are you doing it internally. Right? What's your organization doing internally? Because if you're a broken organization, it doesn't matter how great the brand is.
When you talk about size of an organization, and I agree, when you start to get into these larger companies who may tend to have a brand strategy already identified, but they still have some growth to go, especially with understanding their customer needs. Do you see any difference when we think about B2B or a B2C type of company?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. We work with a lot of large Fortune 500 brands, both on the B2B and B2C side, on brand storytelling, right? You know, brands are leaning into this initiative of brand-funded, sponsored, subsidized content, you know, short form, long form documentary storytelling that is a departure from your traditional interruptive ads, right? Which is, I think, is a great movement for brands to lean in on authentic stories and storytellers. All that said, many of these large organizations and brands that have built in brand story, brand strategy, CSR, DEI departments, those have, you know, they were all into it full force during kind of inspired by the pandemic, you know, the great resignation, quiet quitting. They felt the need and the desire from their audience to lean into these more authentic values. Now that we're facing this sort of macroeconomic sort of slowdown or plateau, recession, dare I call it, these entire departments are getting wiped, or their budgets are being completely slashed. People are losing their jobs. I mean, it's unfortunate because they were just getting going on the cusp of this great change. And sticking with that is, again, I'm not just saying this as a feel good. The data is there to prove that this is what customers want and demand, building brand equity, brand affinity. And unfortunately, sometimes that's the changing of the guard at the C-suite that has a different mandate. Hey, we didn't hit our goals last quarter. We're bringing somebody in who's all about singular bottom line versus triple bottom line. I think a lot of these big organizations, they are taking one step forward and sometimes one or two steps back based on macro market conditions, the more lean and stealthy you can be, I think you're going to be able to kind of weather those little storms and stay the course.
Exactly. Being lean and being fluid and being adaptable, because this is the way it's shaking out. This is not a blip. We are in transformative times. And so this idea of how can we bring the humanity into a brand? How can we bring the heart into it? And there's nothing better than telling stories, right? And so getting in that way, and then looking at how do we tell the story? Does the story have to be a 6-month project that's going to take millions of dollars for us to put production around? Or can we start telling stories on TikTok for, 30 seconds at a time, right? As long as it's around that same thing. Let's do it quickly and keep those stories as part of that fuel that we're sending out to the marketplace.
That's spot on, Teresa. I mean, that's the thing. It's easy for a larger organization to allocate hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars towards these, really impressive pieces of work. I mean, last year, WeTransfer, no one really knew the film behind it, but won the Academy Award for Best Short Documentary Film. It was a WeTransfer produced film. They're putting a lot of time and effort into it, but gosh, we need to democratize that. I mean, everyone knows how to create short form content. Look at social media. You don't have to be a big brand with big budgets to create good, compelling content, right? It should be done at every single level. And the more sort of nimble, agile, low overhead you can be about that will, I think, allow you to stay the course.
You know, one of the biggest problems that I see in the B2B space is a lack of understanding of who the customer actually is. Now, we could argue, and a lot of people do this with me, is they argue that the B2B that they are selling to is their customer. And I argue that your customer still has a customer that they have to appeal to. So when we talk about empathy, oftentimes these businesses are solely focused on making the sale, but are not going beyond that to reach the consumer that is ultimately going to buy. They can accomplish that. Then they're ultimately going to be able to generate more equity in their own business because they're able to then appeal and grow that story beyond the storytelling and the branding that they're trying to achieve.
When I do my crystallization work with people, I create models with the understanding that it's not only crystallizing their brilliance, but it's crystallizing their brilliance in a way that's serving the customer's biggest pain point. Because if you don't, then you're going to have a mismatch, right? So when I work with them, co-create with them, work the wobble of their model to make it perfect, I hold the space of the customer. So I'm the branding person that starts it, with the draft process, and that we start working it together. And then I shift to customer. I shift to the customer going, how am I going to receive what we just created? And are you solving my problem, right? Because if we can talk from the customer's perspective and really feel their pain, what are they really, really, and I hate the phrase, what are you staying awake at night? What's keeping you up at night? Because I don't want to put any bad juju out into the world that anybody would have a sleepless night. But what I like to say is, what would inspire you? What would light you up? What would make life just so juicy that you couldn't get enough of it? Let's put our place in that, in our customer's mind, and say, what could we do to turn it up to 11 for them, right? Of life. Make it have meaning, and then craft the brand around that, right? Based on whatever the client's services are or products are.
Yeah, I love that you say that you hold space as kind of the end consumer. I think that's super important to kind of reflect back to the business leaders. And I'm a big fan of, the story brand framework, which, again, is based on storytelling models of who is your character, what are their wants, what is their challenge and their problem that you're trying to overcome. You as a business are the guide to help guide them through that aspirational transformation, right, to a resolution. And it's not always one size fits all. Right? We have plenty of clients that come to us, and we have B2B clients, we have B2C, and we have this archetype and this persona, and it's just difficult to navigate that. And you have to be nuanced around at least grouping those personas into their core needs, desires, wants, transformational goals, right? And so it's not a singular messaging thread that one size fits all. It's meeting people where they are, whether it's through unique messaging channels or platforms or landing pages or microsites, and curating that customer journey accordingly. I think that's a big part of it. you know, for B2B, and I think to your point, Chris, it's interesting. It's you're helping your B2B partner do their job better. If you're looking a further step down the road and say, who is your end consumer, right? How can we roll that all up into your communications? I think that's critical importance. And you are starting to see more B2B embrace branding where they weren't before, right? Branding, that's for B2C companies. And we don't have to kind of tell our story and our mission. Legacy companies, been around for 50, 100 years, Honeywell and, you know, a lot of these different companies leaning into it. And it's paying dividends. You know, you see their partners being inspired, saying things like, and I've seen this with clients, we didn't know you provided that or offered this or offered that. It's giving them a new lens in which to view you as a partner.
And even what branding is. I mean, we typically think about it in that way, that it's a B2C and how am I going to brand that out for the television commercial? But it's also, what is that company brand? And it's also increasingly, what is your personal brand? I mean, I work with high level attorneys, for example, giving them their practice brand. These are incredibly talented professionals that have outstanding skill, and yet they have no personal brand. And yet they have business development responsibilities. If they're going to be a senior equity partner, they are going to need to learn how to sell, right? They're going to need to know how to sell. So in order to sell, they're going to need to be clear on their brand. So I think this even notion of branding is starting to get nebulous, and people are realizing that everybody is a brand, right? And we need to treat it as such.
The collaboration, Teresa, that you talked about at the beginning, I'm curious from your perspective, at what point in time do you start to bring that collaboration into your strategy?
All the time, actually. It's interwoven, frankly. It really is. So it's always interesting when I have a crystallization that I do, because I actually do 95% of it before we get together. I look at what they've already done. I analyze what they've already done through their content and where they shine and what they really are trying to say. And I weed through what I call word salad, thought spaghetti, half-baked ideas, ad infinitum. I mean, I move through so much content, it's ridiculous, to bring down to something that I can draw on a cocktail napkin. Then becomes the design thinking when I get together with them. And then I reveal this model to them and say, this is how I saw you. And we start working collaboratively or co-creatively. I say, this isn't my brand that I gave you. This is us working it together. And we go back and forth. We ideate. We say what works, what doesn't work. How do we work the wobble to what I call get to hell yes status? I mean, I want to be able to have them go like, oh, like it's so good, right? When they know that the brand is that good, they can feel it. They can feel it. You can see it in them that they are at hell yeah status. When you get there, you can communicate to an entire organization about that mission and about that brand and about what you're going to be doing when you get to that level. And you always want to have that level of collaboration, co-creation. I call course correction and I'm a refiner and an expander, right? Because I'm out of their organization. I can see them with really clear eyes. So I refine it down to its essence. And at the same time, expand. What can you do more that you aren't really doing now? And every brand who really wants to stay sustainable and growing through these transformative times is going to want to have a marketing resource, trusted marketing resource that is going to ideate with them and is going to evaluate that and make sure that we can course correct and make it better and better and better. It's not a one and done thing. It's a relationship that you want to establish.
Yeah, just to add on to that, I mean, I think one of the biggest things that's overlooked and undervalued with organizations is looking at your internal team and your internal stakeholders. It's easy to kind of start with the outside in and doing kind of consumer interviews and test groups and focus groups. Start within your organization. You know, there's oftentimes this massive sort of, you know, what we consider purpose paradox or communication gap from the C-suite who's worked on such things like brand communications and that crystallized strategy, and the middle and kind of lower, you know, management and teams that are the boots on the ground and that have the closest touch point with your partners, your end consumers, right? What are they hearing? What are they experiencing? What are they thinking? I mean, they are flying close to the sun on your behalf. You know, get real, sit down with them, hey, and stress test your own concepts, right? Hey, I feel hell yes, but Does this hell yes for you and you and you, right? I mean, is this value aligned with, you know, not just you and why you come to work every day, but what you're hearing from our customers and what their needs are? That's the ultimate stress test.
Yep, exactly. And to move through that process in waves, I have found works well, is you get those core decision makers that really have their fingers on the pulse of what the company is and what they, where you want to go, get that crystallization, and then start bringing in, of course, first and foremost, your marketing team, right? Does your marketing team, every single person who's actually going to execute off of this thing, really understand it and are bought in? Because if they're not bought in and they're just going, oh, great, another thing, right? They are not going to put the level of effort. They might do a checking off the box, yes, I did this post, or yes, I did this, but it's not going to be the same if they don't really feel it.
To demonstrate that, I spent 5 years at Google developing stories and branding strategies. And during that time, the number of times that I asked our own employees to help develop messaging, because they're the frontline workers, they're the salespeople who have the most experience, and we just could not do it.
You know, I think though that part of the problem is that we haven't really created companies that are empathetic to the other departments and what they do. So, you know, to me, even just sales and marketing, you know, are your marketing people understanding the sales process? And are your salespeople understanding what the marketing people are doing? Because that is where the do-re-mi ends up, is when you've got great marketing and then the salespeople can close it, right? And they can get what you're, get the revenue. How I feel like the organizations we've talked about culturally, let's make sure that we have inclusive companies and that we are all unified and that everything is, you know, we're one company, right? One brand. And there are challenges because people don't really take the time. It tends to be in a platitude as opposed to does everybody really understand how money is actually made in this company?
You're still dealing with organizational structure that says that's not your job, so don't worry about it. Or there's no recognition for when you do something that's outside of your role. And as long as that is the culture and the mentality of an organization, there will never be successful opportunities. Not only getting people to participate, but being able to understand what the satisfaction of your employees are is something that is missing. So we talk all the time about, you know, storytelling and sales and marketing, ultimately to drive a customer satisfaction score. But can you build a parallel between your CSAT and your employee satisfaction score? And those organizations that can actually accomplish that are able to understand and deliver to their customers with more impact than other organizations.
I think it's getting them not just as executors of this plan, but being invested early on, not just, you know, they starting early and often in the process. If you hand someone down the line this CSAT, you know, paradigm framework that they had no part in curating, developing, planning, they're just plugging in numbers and reports. They don't feel invested in, are these the right questions we should be asking? Is this the right process? And again, that's why it's so important to get these people at the table as true stakeholders early in the process, so they do feel invested and empowered to share their stories, right? Because there's that trust. There's not that fear of, well, if I say it went well or it went wrong, there might be some pushback, right? Versus, hey, they invited me to the round table early on in this process because they believed in what my role is in this company. And they want to listen, not just at the end of the experience, but at all phases.
I had that happen just recently with one of my corporate clients where I crystallized the brilliance of this association with the CEO, who is the you know, board representative, essentially, because I like to do one-on-one work at the very, very beginning, just to get something solid. And then we brought in the marketing team, and the head of the marketing department took a look at it, and I, you know, ran through it, and he gave a small but essential piece of feedback. Essential. this is actually about marketing professionals too, to really be able to sit and listen. When someone who may not be at the pay grade that you're expecting them to be at, or that wrote the check to you, but they say something that is really important, right, about the brand that you had maybe not seen or just didn't know, you know, have that exposure. When you get that information, to take that in, and we tweaked the brand, the crystallized model of this organization, and now it's what I would call perfect. And so would he. And so would his team, because we listened early enough on and not just shoved it down his throat and his team's throat to say, now go do this. Oh, and by the way, I hope you're authentic and passionate and that you love it. Right. So he is passionate and he loves it, and he stands behind it. And he is 100% there because he was involved early on in that discussion and contributed meaningfully. A small thing, but a meaningful thing that really was critical to its success.
I think leadership participation is essential, no matter what you're trying to do within an organization. And so, since we're speaking about leadership, what are some of the ways that a leader can implement empathy into their organization today?
Well, one of the easiest ways is to just strengthen the skill of listening, right? That being a listener first. So where in your process of being a leader throughout an average week are you not talking and listening to your customers, your team, the industry, your colleagues? Who are you shutting your mouth and opening your mind and engaging your ears to actually start to get out of the position of the central character of the show? Right? That you're not the central character of the show, I think is that's the number one thing.
Yeah, it's certainly the ability to stop and listen and not be, you know, the only and loudest voice in the room. Asking the right questions. That to me is something I'm constantly working on, you know, for my own self. You know, it's easy to think as a founder, CEO, leader that you have to have all the answers all the time. Right? Being willing and being able to be vulnerable and relying on people that are around you that might have insights, those nuances, right, that make all the difference in the world. Asking the right questions. You know, what is your take on it? What do you think? Does this feel good? Does this feel right? If you develop that culture of always having the right answer and always kind of having a retort for someone that comes to you with a problem, people aren't going to develop the skill set to think critically about how to solve something, let alone share active feedback that you might be missing. Leaders have blind spots, right? So you've got to be willing to kind of check the ego at the door, ask questions, even when it's uncomfortable, and you'll be amazed at some of the things you hear.
And ask the questions like, you know, what are you going to talk about this that after this is over? What am I missing? What don't I know? As a leader, what you can do in addition to just strengthening your listening muscles, your true, deep, deep listening muscles, is to also ask those self-deprecating questions that says, talk to me like I'm a six-year-old. What am I missing? Right? What am I missing? What are you going to talk about if I did a boneheaded thing today in this meeting? What is it that I'm not seeing? Right? And instead of just saying, is this okay? Or what do you think? Because they're, of course, their natural inclination is yes, boss, yes, boss, yes, boss. It's all okay, boss. So how can you make it a super safe environment by even asking a question that leads them into, you know, what's the mistake that I'm making right now by not seeing? We'll give them a little more confidence to speak up.
I did an episode just a couple of weeks ago on psychological safety. So you can go back and check that out. And Jeff Bezos is famous for leaving one seat vacant at every meeting, board meeting, no matter what the size of the event. And it's designed to bring a customer to the table. That one empty seat is for the customer. And I think any individual out there that puts that much obsession to the customer is ultimately going to be able to drive that empathy and build it into the storytelling and branding that we've been talking about today. Well, thank you both for joining us. I appreciate your perspective. It's been a fabulous conversation.
Well, I would love it if anybody wants to know a little bit more about the crystallization process or just kind of who I am, teresarose.com. And if you're wondering how to spell it, it looks like theresarose.com.
What a great visual. Love it. Yeah, thanks, Teresa. It was wonderful connecting with you. Chris, thanks for having me. Again, you can would love to hear any questions, thoughts. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Chase Friedman, Friedman. I don't have a really cool, like, little memorable ism for you, but otherwise, you could check out our work on my agency at vanquishmediagroup.com. Awesome chat with you all today.
And of course, thanks to all of you who are listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Your feedback helps us improve and grow. And if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for the show, you can connect with us throughout social media and online at Chris Hood Show. And please share this episode with your friends, family, colleagues, or anyone else looking to grow their business and start their own digital evolution. Until next week, take care and stay connected.